This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
We may not have a cent.
Good morning, this is Susan Lee. You and Your Money, your show for financial balance and financial health. Today we're going to talk about getting a mortgage and thinking about buying an apartment or a house, but first some things that I want to talk to you about. Well, I think history has been made, although it's in England and not here, but here's the headline. Men in part-time work paid less than women. The Office for National Statistics said yesterday that men in part-time work are paid less than women, suggesting that at least one of the traditional imbalances between men and women is reversing. The latest statistics, and remember this is England, the UK, which relate to last year, suggest that men in part-time work were paid 3.5% less than women on average. However, so thank God the status quo is maintained. Employees as a whole, men earn 22.5% more than women. But it is interesting that there is this tilting towards part-time work, which I really don't quite understand, but that's what the article said. Now, in honor of the subject today, and if you're feeling, oh, my God, I still can't afford to buy anything, or maybe I can get into a city place, I want to tell you about the New York City HDC website. You can go to www.nychdc.com and you can find out all different kinds of city rentals that you possibly can get into, or co-ops that are being constructed, although I'm not really sure how many of them really are being constructed. But nonetheless, let me give you the name of that website again. It's the New York City HDC, which stands for Housing Development Corporation. So that's www.nychdc.com, and they'll tell you about the income limitations that you have, and I found it very interesting. Go to it and just see what's available for those of you in New York City and outside. I'm sorry that this isn't really going to apply to you. Okay, prices of housing have fallen because of the economic crisis, and people are calling to ask if it's a good time to buy a house, and how do you get credit from a bank when TV says banks aren't lending. To help us figure out what's a good way to proceed is mortgage broker and author of the new book, The New Rules for Mortgages by Dale Siegel. Welcome to You and Your Money, Dale.
Hi, how are you, Susan?
I'm fine. All right. So many people are now living through the nightmares of foreclosures that I want to start out with asking you to discuss your ideas of how someone can really determine if they can afford to buy.
Well, the same as they always could, the same as they always should, I should say. The rules really haven't changed with figuring out what you personally can afford to buy. A person has to look at what their monthly expenses are overall and what they can afford for a housing expense. They also need to see how much money they have available to put down on a house and how much money they'll have left over in reserves after they close. Those rules haven't changed for the consumer. The consumer always needed to go through that exercise. What's changed?
Wait. Let's delve into that a little more, because for me, one of the things, and I've said this on this show, one of the things I'm really proud of is I've been, and Dale, you've been on the show to preach this belief system: you shouldn't buy what you can't afford. As I want to go through the details of what you actually can afford, and my question is, what percentage of your income should you allot to housing?
Okay. The banks, I'll give you the two sides. The banks, they calculate 33% of your gross monthly income towards housing expense. They use gross monthly income. They say that a person shouldn't spend more than a third of their gross paycheck on housing expense. Over the past 5 years, because the prices of real estate have skyrocketed and, of course, people have bought much more than they can afford, the average person spends 65% of their income on housing, which is a lot. What people should use, first-time home buyers, what they should use as a rule of thumb, if I rent an apartment and I spend $2,000 a month now on my rent, I should use that as my baseline to see if I can afford that or if it's too high or if I can afford more. And I need to take into consideration the big picture on I need to eat, I need to buy furniture, I need to save a little money, I want to go on vacation once a year. So people need to probably assume they can afford less than the bank tells you you can afford.
Even now. So the other concern that I have is that I don't know anyone. Well, that's an exaggeration. Most people I encounter are feeling their jobs are very fragile. And I have clients who have bought when their jobs were very fragile and then were fired. How do you fit in how you view buying an apartment or a house with how to, judging if you're going to have the same job next year?
I think that two sides. People, if my job was fragile and I wasn't sure if my company or my industry, you know, was going to be stable in a year from now, now might not be a good time for me to buy a house. I mean, why would you take on, you know, an enormous expense and debt if you weren't quite sure if you were going to be working for the next 12 months, and if you do lose your job, how long is it going to take you to get a new job? So, responsibly, you probably shouldn't buy a house, okay? Just stay where you are until things stable out and you're sure.
Yeah, it's a real problem because the phone calls I'm getting are, oh, God, I found such a bargain. And suddenly the focus is on the bargain rather than on the people's financial situations.
Well, I think that's the problem, you know, we've always had here. We're very short-sighted. You know, it's a very what-can-you-do-for-me-today society. Nobody thinks of the 5-year plan or the 10-year plan, and the 5- and 10-year plan are, you know, will you be employed, what will your income be, and what will your reserves be? But people just look at today. You know, mm-hmm. I want that shiny new Mercedes. What can you do for me today?
So when you're making a judgment between renting and buying, how do you weigh the two different factors?
When making a judgment?
Yeah, how do you judge whether you should buy or stay renting other than affordability? Are there any other things you should consider?
You know, like some people are meant to rent forever, you know, and there's nothing wrong with just renting. People think that you need to have a house because renting is throwing money away, but it's not. You're paying for your housing, and you need to pay for it in one way or another. So some people shouldn't buy, A, because they're not financially sound enough. They're not financially secure enough. You know, their future, their financial future might not be stable enough. So you really need to look at not really what you want today, but where do you want to be 5 years from now and 10 years from now?
Well, I'm glad we've had this conversation over the last 10 years a few times on this show, and I'm just really grateful that we've had it because nobody's called me up to say, Susan, I foreclosed because you had guests on or you said buy, because you've been saying the same thing for years,
right.
Like don't
right.
go overboard. Okay, so let's talk about the first-time homeowner's credit, which has just been expanded. Can you tell us what the credit is and how it's affecting home purchases and what the new expansion means?
All right. I have a contrarian view on that. All right. The credit is $8,000 to first-time home buyers. There were income levels, qualifications. I think you can't make more than $225,000 a year combined income. And you get an $8,000 first-time home buyer. It's been extended through April 30th of next year. All right. They also expanded on that for people that are moved. They call them move-up, if you're moving up to a larger house, I guess. The criteria there is I think you get $6,500, and You need to be living in your current home 5 out of the last 8 years, and then you can get the $6,500. So they're hoping to open it up to even more people, all right? So what I think is that it shouldn't be the incentive to go buy a house today. I'm not going to go and buy a $400,000 house or a $300,000 house and get myself into $250,000 or $350,000 worth of debt so I can get $8,000 credit, because it's not going to do anything for you. You have to look at it as a bonus, okay? I bought a house. I love my house. I can afford my mortgage, and yay, I got an $8,000 tax credit. That's the way you need to look at it. You know, but unfortunately, you know, it's getting marketed as, buy a house now or you're going to lose out on $8,000. But that's not the way you should look at it, in my opinion.
No.
Realtors say that it's increasing the market. It's keeping the market going, you know, and it put a jolt in the market. I don't know any of my clients, you know, that chose to buy a house before the deadline was November 30th, so they could get the $8,000. They might have made sure they closed before the deadline because they were buying a house anyway and they wanted the $8,000. So
I just came back from a tour of my family in Denver and Sacramento and Eugene, and outside of Denver and Sacramento are these rings of houses that were developed for people who couldn't afford it. And now there are these rings of communities that are all almost majority foreclosed. So I think what you're saying is really important for people to hear. Don't take the $8,000 as a reason to buy. Regard it as part of it, but if you can't afford it, please don't. Okay, so in terms of going out and buying, it seems to somebody who's not in the market, as you are, that prices are so unsettled. How can you possibly figure out what something is worth when there's such disparity between bid and asked and what people say?
You don't know what something is worth, and you don't know what it's going to be worth after you buy it. There are no bargains out there. I don't care what anybody says, you know. Well, let me rephrase that. Nothing is a bargain unless you love the house, want the house, and can afford the house. You don't buy a house because you think it's a steal. So what we've always done was, within the appraisal, and this goes back like, I don't know, 5 years, 8 years, 7 years, within the body of the appraiser must show the last 5 years' sales transactions and what the prices were. So 3 years ago, 4 years, 5 years ago, that was always something that I looked at, maybe out of curiosity. I wanted to see what the last guy, the seller, bought the house for. So if somebody bought a house for $150,000 and 2 years later he's selling it for $350,000, is it really worth $350,000? No. It's inflated. So in today's market, what I would probably want to know as a buyer is, what was this house worth 7 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago? Because whatever it was worth within the last 5 years, that was certainly inflated. So if a house was worth $400,000 2 years ago, it's probably worth realistically $200,000 now. And I'm making these numbers up, so nothing's cut in stone. So if you're buying the house for $275,000, you're still not getting a bargain. So people need to go off of historical pricing, because that's the more realistic value, not the value over the last 5 years.
Okay, so I've met your criteria. Now I want to learn about getting a mortgage. I hear that mortgages are impossible, so let's start with what you do before you go for a mortgage. I didn't pay a credit card once or something like that. Should I check my credit? How do I do it? Should I clean up any issue before I apply?
Yeah. Before you apply for a mortgage, let's say you think you're going to go buy a house in the next 3 months. So what the borrower, what we do to qualify a borrower is we look at their credit, their income, and their assets. The first thing you want to do is get all your paperwork together, all right? You want to get, I'm not going to give you a whole list, but you want to get your income verifications, tax returns, current employment. You want to get all your bank statements, your 401k, that stuff together. So you can show somebody, the bank, all your financial information. Credit. Credit is now one of the largest criteria, where it used to be we looked at everything together, your credit, your income, and your assets, all as one big package, compensating for the other. Now we look at your credit alone. We measure it by a FICO score. Fair Isaac and Company is a FICO score. It goes from 350 to 850. 850 being the best. Many banks will not do a mortgage with a FICO score under 680. So if you're, or they will do them, but they're going to charge you a whole lot. If your FICO score is under 680, you definitely have work to do. The new good FICO score is 720 and above. A lot of people don't have such great FICO scores now, given their financial situations. So you want to get a copy of your credit report. How do you do it? Do not go on, you know, freecreditreport.com. What it is, they're just harvesting names, okay, to sell for lists. What you would do is you would go directly to any of the three bureaus, the three main credit bureaus. You can do it online. It's easy. It's secure. You get a copy of your credit report and make sure that they give you your FICO score with it, okay, because you want to know what your score is. Review your credit report. If you have an unpaid, you know, bill that's a charge-off from 2 years ago with Ann Taylor, pay it. If you have a bill that's 7 years old for $1,000, you know, don't bother. Because what we do is we look at the last 5 years. So stuff that's really old, it's almost like you don't want to dredge up your bad credit issues that are older than 5 years unless somebody tells you to do it. Other than an IRS tax lien or something like that.
This is Susan Lee, You and Your Money, your show for financial balance and financial health. Today we're speaking with mortgage broker and author of The New Rules for Mortgages, Dale Siegel. If you want to ask her, Dale, any questions, you can call 914-422-0810. That's 914-422-0810. So, Dale, if you ask one credit company, the other two have the same credit history?
That's a good question. No, but they should be close. The reason why they all don't have exactly the same history, because the vendors, which are the banks and the retail credit card companies, they pay to report, and they might only pay to report to two, you know, two out of the three. But they should be close, within a range of, I don't know, 50 points, 75 points. We've seen bigger swings, but one is good to do your research on. Let's put it that way.
Can you tell us if banks are actually giving mortgages and how lending has changed in the past year for getting a mortgage?
The banks are lending money, and what has changed is, A, it takes a long time. Long time meaning before you could probably close within 30 days. Now I'd give myself 60. All right? There's a lot more paperwork involved. There are many more disclosures that need to be signed. So everything takes a lot longer because, you know, we give you papers in the beginning, the middle, and the end, and there's a lot to sign, a lot to return. The banks, the guidelines are also much stricter, whereas before the bank would let you have a housing expense of 65% of your gross monthly income, now they probably won't push it more than 33, 35% of your gross monthly income. So it's harder in that, you know, it's a lot more audience participation. And you really need to qualify, you know, on much tighter guidelines than you were.
Does that go for the HUD loans, too, which I understand are still cheaper than the bank loans?
The FHA loans, they're not cheaper. They're just a little broader, broader in requirements. Like they might stretch a couple, you know, down payments and stuff like that. Just as hard. And what we've been seeing is that HUD, the FHA, mirrors changes that Fannie and Freddie make. So if Fannie and Freddie require a certain, you know, rider to an appraisal a month or two or three later, the FHA will also require it.
Now, you mentioned the magic word down payment. It seemed to me it got to the point where the bank was paying you to buy a house with no down payment. How much of a down payment do you have to have now?
The best is 20% down. Okay. There are banks that'll still do, you know, 5%, 10%. They're hard. It's hard now to get a first mortgage and a second mortgage combined, so that's difficult. PMI, private mortgage insurance, for people that put less than 20% down, is difficult to get, all right? So the best place to start is 20% down. And then your FICO score takes into play. The lower your FICO score, the more money the bank will require you to put down or charge you a higher interest rate.
Hmm. So can you take us through getting a mortgage? I mean, like, what's the process? Oh, God, I love this house, I say to the broker. Now what?
Well, first thing the broker is going to say is, number one, do you have an attorney, assuming you're in an attorney state? And number two, have you spoken to a loan officer? So when you go shopping for a home, probably the first thing you need to do before that is speak to somebody at a bank or a mortgage bank or a broker to get pre-qualified for a loan. So basically what they're doing is you're number crunching for you. They're gathering your information, and they're giving you a list of all the paperwork you're going to need to get together. Okay? So you start talking to somebody you're comfortable. You understand what the numbers are and what range and what kind of paperwork you need. You find a house. You call your loan officer. You start filling out paperwork. They fill it out for you. You sign paperwork. You submit your income and asset information. They run your credit. Okay, that would be the first step. Submitting documents and signing bank papers. And then after that, then they will process a loan. They call it processing. They process a file. They'll send you more paperwork. They'll send you missing items lists, you know. So the better prepared you are up front, the smoother it goes for you.
And then once you get the mortgage and say you buy a co-op, get permission of the co-op to buy, then you can actually buy.
Yeah, then once the bank has all their paperwork, now this changed a little bit where banks want to see a fully executed contract of sale, okay, in the beginning of the process. Before, we could just get you a commitment letter, not even have a property in mind. Now the banks require a fully executed contract of sale, and they want to order the appraisal right away. So you need to get everything in order in the beginning. So then they'll give you a commitment letter. After you get the commitment letter, they might ask for a couple more things. Your lawyer gets the commitment letter. They speak to the bank's lawyer. Everybody starts getting everything together, and then you go to the closing. But there's a lot of people involved in the background that you, the consumer, don't really have contact with. You have a lot of contact with your lender, your realtor, and your attorney.
Now, could you take about a minute and a half, to give us some final advice for getting a mortgage or whatever else you'd like to give us final advice about?
Well, my advice is always be prepared, okay? Get all your paperwork together. Do your own income and expense analysis. Really think about where you're going to be and want to be in 5 years from now. Think about large expenses that might be coming up. Kids going to college, you want to buy a vacation home, you might need to care for your parents. You know, how much traveling do you want to do? Will you have to eliminate traveling in order to buy a home? Stuff like that. So you really need to look at your own financial picture today, 5 years from now, you know, and put together your own plan. You need to have all your paperwork together. You should also have your professionals lined up. Have your attorney lined up. You don't need to have a house to interview attorneys to see, you know, who you're going to use when you buy a house. Have your loan officer lined up. You might need homeowner's insurance. Have that person lined up. The key to a stress-free real estate transaction, and, of course, everything always, you know, there's always details, is to be prepared. That's the key.
This is Susan Lee, You and Your Money. Today we've been speaking with mortgage broker and author of The New Rules for Mortgages by Dale Siegel. If you have any questions for Dale, please call 914-422-0810. That's Dale Siegel, 914-422-0810. Dale, thanks very much for coming on You and Your Money.
Thank you very much, Susan.
If you want to hear this show or download a copy of it, please go to www.bai.org. If you have any comments on this show or ideas for future shows, please contact me at www.freelancetaxation. That's the word freelance and the word taxation combined, www.freelancetaxation.com, or call me at 212-633-1516, 212-633-1516. I thank you for listening today and hope you will tune in again to You and Your Money.
Oh, I've got your love and you know you've got mine, so we're gonna make it.
The Sundiata Akoli Freedom Campaign invites one and all to come and dance, eat, drink, and mingle as we celebrate the liberation of our sister, Asada Shakur, on the 30th anniversary of her excarceration, and for Sundiata Akoli, now in his 36th year in captivity and about to go before the New Jersey Parole Board. On November 14th, we remember all our jailed combatants and renew our pledge to free them all. That's Saturday, November 14th. 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Freedom Dance at the Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Center, 310 West 43rd Street in Manhattan. For tickets and information, call 718-512-5008. All proceeds go to the Sundiata Akoli Freedom Campaign.
From the vault to the classroom, the Pacifica Radio Archives annual marathon broadcast fund drive launches the campus campaign, providing a new generation with a sound education.
This is Noam Chomsky.
You donate, and we send a copy of one of our historic compilations to a school or college of your choice.
Very pleased to be able to express my enthusiasm and strong support for the Archives campaign, which is bringing to colleges the very rich archives of Pacifica for the past 60 years. It's sure to be an invaluable resource.
The Campus Campaign 2.0, coming November 16th and 17th right here on your Pacifica radio station.
I love science.
So do I. I love science.
I know. And because we both love science so much, I was wondering who you thought would be the most generous supporters of WBAI.
You mean scientists?
No, not necessarily scientists.
What do you mean? Who would be most generous? What group? What ethnic group?
Not ethnic group.
Then what do you mean? Socioeconomic group?
No.
Democrats or Republicans?
No.
Men or women?
What people born under what sign of the zodiac will be most generous?
Jesus was a Capricorn.
If you would like to help make your astrological sign the most generous, send your check today to WBAI. And don't forget to tell us the answer. What's your sign?
And the previous program was You and Your Money with Susan Lee, and that's heard on Fridays at 10:30 a.m. here on WBAI. Coming up next is actually the Open Center Show at 11 a.m., followed by Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fenari at noon. And then at 1 p.m. is Health Styles with Diane Mason and Barbara Glickstein, and 2 p.m. is, excuse me, and 2 p.m. is Nonfiction with Harry Allen. Once again, all heard on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, broadcasting throughout the tri-state area and streaming live at WBAI.org. And just want to let people know, for those people who are having problems in sending their ballots back, this is the address where you should send your ballot to. Get your pens and pencils ready with some paper. Here's the address. WBAI, Pacifica Radio, P.O. Box 996, Bowling Green Annex, 90 Church Street, New York, New York, 1007 is the zip code. Once again, WBAI, P.O. Box 996, Bowling Green Annex, 90 Church Street, New York, New York.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.